Good afternoon, Coin State Forest to order at 3:03 p.m. I think that's a minute earlier than last time. It's Tuesday, February 8, 2022. We're in the Max Greenberg Room in Alaska Capitol. Members present from my left to my right, Representatives Vance, Kaufman, myself, Chuck Rice Tompkins, Representatives Story and Klayman, and thus with five members present, we have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you, Sophia and Lydia, as always, for facilitating today's meeting, as well as Jeff, the Fearless Committee Aide for State Affairs. Scheduling points of order, DOA Finance Subcommittee, per the custom for start of session, will commence in this room circa 4 o'clock. Notably, however, the Finance Subcommittee is canceled on Thursday, so State Affairs will expand to fill the available time. So we'll run from 3 to 5 on Thursday, a departure from past weeks. We have two items on today's agenda. The first item is House Bill 142 from Representative McCarty. This is effectively a first hearing for 2022, but I think the committee will recall the content from last year when we had two hearings, April 29 and May 4. And we heard public testimony last year, and we closed public testimony. I don't think it's my intention to do another bite at that apple, but rather focus on the policy, entertain amendments, and look to move the legislation. And then the second item of today's agenda is a second hearing for House Bill 94 from Representative Foster, which relates to leases. So with that, we can bring House Bill 142 back before the committee. Representative McCarty, I might ask that, just given lapsed time, you refresh us on the thrust of the bill, as well as any new information you might want to bring to the committee's attention. And we can go from there. And I should just note, as you're situating yourself online for the committee's reference and available for questions, is Corey Bigelow, Operations Manager with the PFD Division in the Department of Revenue, as well as Emily Nauman with Legislative Legal. Representative McCarty.
Hey, thank you, Chair. I'm Representative Ken McCarty from District 13, Chugiak, Eagle River, J-Bear. So thanks for inviting me back for hearing of 142. Let me go over the review of the sponsor statement of 142. So the act relating to eligibility of the permanent fund dividend. Committee substitute four, and this is House 142, limits the permanent fund dividend eligibility of active duty military members to those who are physically stationed in Alaska only. This bill eliminates the allowable absence in AS 43.23.0083A of a member serving on active duty in the military in the United States Armed Forces and their dependents stationed in another state or country. 142 specifies an allowable allowance of a member serving on active duty in the U.S. military who is stationed in the state of Alaska, but is or has been out of the state on deployment orders or a temporary duty assignment, TDY. Future intent is a difficult thing to presume and define. Because of this, 142 also eliminates the allowable absence eligibility criteria listed in AS 43.23.008E. That requires the Department of Revenue Permanent Fund Division to consider factors that show an absent applicant's intention of returning to the state indefinitely in the future after permanent change of station, a PCS. Those considerations would no longer be included in determining eligibility of military service members or their family members who have moved out of state. It is the sponsor's intent that every eligible Alaskan who currently and physically resides in the state of Alaska receives a PFD. Alaskans serving in the military and their dependents who have physically moved out of the state will no longer be eligible to receive a PFD until they return and reside in Alaska once again. In 2018, the state dispersed 3,096 dividends to service members who were out of state more than 180 days, who may or may not return someday, distributing over 4.9 So I have the 4,900, I think it's 4.9 million out of state. 142 will ensure that Alaska PFD monies are reserved for Alaskans who currently and physically reside within the state of Alaska. So the position or where 142 is at, spent some time since we've last met to talk to the Permanent Fund Division about some language in it. And if you'd like to hear from them regarding what they're recommending in the current of 142.
Representative McCready, do you think it would be helpful to hear from the division in this moment, or?
I think it would be, because since we last met, talking to them, that there's sections that would be advisable to remove, delete, and because it causes some confusion to other individuals that are receiving the dividend. And so instead of causing that confusion, this would be just a lot cleaner to delete those pieces that were originally put in.
Absolutely, yes. And I was just getting a statute book so I can follow along. Ms. Bigelow, I think, ball to you.
Thank you, Chair. This is...
Excuse me, Mr. Bigelow, based on your voice. Sorry.
Thank you. Chair Tompkins, can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Oh, thank you. For the record, my name is Corey Bigelow. I am the operations manager for the Permanent Fund Dividend Division. And to speak to Representative McCarty's comments, the division did meet with him in his office to discuss HB 142. We did share some concerns that some of the repeal language that he included in his bill could potentially impact more Alaskans than what is the intended group he is looking to really impact. Did you want specifics on those? I guess I'm just I'm not sure where you'd like me to go with that.
Mr. Chair, I'd like specifics.
Specifics are requested, Mr. Bigelow.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative McCarty, the first element that was noted on the bill was the repeal of AS 4323005F. And the reason that we called out this statute specifically was because it actually is a two-part section. It has two subsections where the first section is actually speaking, that would be, I apologize, I'm looking at the wrong one in front of me. So I'm looking at 4323005F. Wait a second. I apologize. The numbers on my not seem to correlate in here. Just a second. Apologies.
No rush.
Okay. I apologize. So that should be E, I believe. Let me make sure. So AS 4323005E. So that is referring to the commissioner may waive the requirement of A4 of this section, but the subsection part 2 of this does not speak directly to military. It speaks to individuals who would potentially be in the custody of Department of Health and Social Services. So our recommendation was to potentially somehow exclude repealing number two, or some language that might include E2 as keeping that and not repealing it. That was the language that he was, or the intent behind the language that he was going for.
Mr. Bigelow, just to confirm, I think I'm tracking in the statute book, but what the provision you're referring to describes are individuals who are in the custody of Hess in accordance with a court order and effectively preserving the prerogative for the commissioner to waive the durational residency requirement in order for such persons to qualify for the PFD. Is that more or less accurate?
Yes, that is accurate.
Okay, thank you. Please proceed.
Follow up, actually, before?
Before you go, Representative Klayman has a question.
As to sure. This reference in 4323.005F, the correction would be it should just list repeal 4323.005F1, but not F2. That would be the correction that the department is requesting.
That is my understanding, Mr. Bigelow. Is that accurate?
Yes, that is accurate. Thank you for clarifying.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, and just for what it is worth, at least in the statute book I'm reading, E has been repealed, so I see how F could become E, but it reads as subsection F in my statute book.
Thank you, and through the chair, I apologize. I was reading the actual stats and regs, and that's why I was confused. So I was looking at the actual and not the proposed.
No problem. I think we have clarity there, and hold on. Representative McCarty has a question or a comment.
Actually, this is Representative Kim McCarty. Through the chair, that not even repeal F at all, okay? The language, let me just kind of go through these different pieces of change. The first one is Section 1 in the bill. So eliminate Section 1 completely, because you'll see that this flow here is also to eliminate the deleting AS 43.23.005A4. And A4 talks about a 72-hour consecutive hours of being in the state. And when originally to take that out, that it was concerned that the individuals just show up for 72 hours and continue on with their intended stay or residency. But the division said that has implications to other individuals, like, for instance, a student that's out of state, or someone that's getting medical treatment, or the list that goes on in 43.23.008, and it just has a whole list of different exceptions there. So the division, from the fund division, said, you know, please don't delete that 72-hour because it has broad implications. So I said, that's fine. We'll just, you know, keep that in there. And then with the 43.23.005F, to just not even touch that at all. Because as you see in F1, in time of national military emergency, and that starts off with that. So this is an exception to dynamic rather than just kind of a standard military operations or be the PCS2 of ACE.
If Russia invades Alaska, for instance, I guess they would be maintaining residency in Alaska, but such a national emergency, assuming that Russia is very interested in invading all sorts of sovereign countries these days.
Point of order, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Klayman.
I'm just struck in listening to this. We have suggested changes from the Permanent Fund Division, and we have some suggested changes by the bill sponsor. And it feels like we're sort of getting into this complicated process of editing by committee. And I'm just wondering, would it make more sense for you to work with the bill sponsor and come up with a committee substitute where it incorporates the changes that he wants, and then he can present that committee substitute with the changes he's requesting? Because it seems like this goes beyond regular amendments, and it's actually something the bill sponsor wants. And if you're comfortable with those, I think it would be better to just hear those as a CS rather than suggest that we should now request all these amendments to suit what he's looking for.
Yeah, I could be open to that, and I'd love to talk more with the sponsor about that. I just in general observation, I've always felt that this section of statutes are these statutes are incredibly poorly written and convoluted in general. And I think that probably makes the process more challenging than it might otherwise be. Maybe what I would propose, Representative McCarty, is let's just hear from the division, and the division can just sort of enumerate all of their thoughts. And then from there, we could establish a process, possibly inclusive of us working together and putting a CS out for the committee's consideration. But maybe just take the opportunity to take in the division's input quickly and take next steps from there. Would that be amenable?
That'd be great. Thank you.
Okay. Well, Mr. Bigelow, I think you flagged the division's first thought on E subsection 2 before we wandered in a different direction. Maybe would you feel comfortable continuing to go through the division's thoughts on this legislation or these statutes?
Through the chair, Chris Tompkins, yes, I'd be happy to do that.
Okay, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Chris Tompkins. The other point or other item that was discussed with Representative McCarty's office was specific to current statute 4323.008E, which speaks specifically to determining an individual's intent. Now, the division recognizes that determining one's intent is a pretty difficult thing to do, but this statute does allow us a benchmark, a way for us to measure by requesting documentation or for an Alaskan to provide a documentation or way for them to show the PFD that they have taken an action that is consistent with establishing or maintaining their residency, or on the contrary side, an action that would be inconsistent, like taking an action outside of the state, registering to vote, or taking a position outside the state. So we use the intent as a benchmark for us to determine by a person's actions. And the idea of removing the intent in our understanding would potentially make the pathway for Alaskans, there would potentially be more Alaskans that would be determined eligible because the intent portion, which would normally be required, would no longer be required. And so we wouldn't need to receive answers or documentation towards that questioning. So it is potential to broaden the pathway, whereas I do feel that Representative McCarty is simply trying to focus or tighten or restrict the pathway for a select group of individuals.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee on that point? Representative Klayman.
Just to follow up, the division's recommendation with respect to this bill is we do not repeal subsection 4323.008E. That's the division's recommendation.
Through the chair, Representative Klayman, that is correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was trying to track all of this, and I was doing okay for a minute there when we were talking about the 4323.005A4, the 4323.005F, but then when we got to 4323.008E, I was having trouble finding that, and I don't know if it's just because I'm online, it's not pulling up the most recent section. So is that what you were saying, Mr. Chairman, that in the statute book you had?
Actually, different statute. My reference to what had been repealed was in relation to the first recommendation from the PFDV division. I can read what I have for 4323008E, which reads, at least in my statute book, to determine whether an individual intends to return and remain in the state indefinitely, the department shall consider all relevant factors, including, and then there are a variety of factors listed. Okay. But the statutes are rather long and unwieldy, so it's kind of hard to find the right section.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions from the committee? Representative Klayman.
To the division, I understand the division's position on subsection F and subsection E, but what about AS 4323005A4? Does the division want that left in or taken out? It's a reverse, because really, should we repeal A4 or leave it in the statute?
Through the chair, Representative Klayman, A4, I believe, is where we feel the language would be best served to provide the results that Representative McCarty is looking for. So we do feel that A4 would be the ideal location to look to update language.
So we should, your recommendation for purposes of the bill is that we should repeal A4.
I think what I heard, although Mr. Bigelow, please feel free to chime in, is I think the division is saying in order to fulfill the intent put forward by Representative McCarty, the division's analysis is that amending or deleting A4 would be consistent with that intent. Although my suspicion is the division is not taking formal position on the bill as a whole. But Mr. Bigelow, can you correct anything I might have just misstated?
Through the chair, that is correct. We do feel that utilizing A4, potentially amending the language, would be Representative McCarty's best route for reaching the intent that he has desired.
Great, thank you. Other questions from the committee for the PFD division? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so is the thinking that because the way this statute is organized with all of these individual allowable absences, that the cleanest way to do that, since under A4, that's the one that specifically speaks to the military service, to just consolidate it into one, I guess, is that why you're recommending that, Mr. Bigelow?
Through the chair, Representative Tarr, I apologize. I'm trying to make sure that I'm not cross-referencing from Representative McCarty's bill and the current statute, and I keep cross-referencing and looking at different statutes, so I apologize. So we would... So I apologize. I'm looking at the current bill, and I'm looking at page 2, line 7. which begins 4323008A3. That's where Representative McCarty's proposed language, because the individual is a deployer traveling on a temporary duty assignment while serving on active duty. That particular section is where we feel it would be the best place for him to amend or propose an amended language that would reach his desired intent.
Any follow-up, Representative Tarr?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Further questions from the committee? Great. Okay. Representative McCarty, any general thoughts that you want to provide to the committee, especially in terms of how you're thinking on the bill or the intent of the bill may have evolved over the interim?
Yes, Ken McCarty, Representative McCarty, the chair. The intent of this bill is to remove individuals who have moved out of state to receive a dividend. Currently, that someone can leave the state and use the word intent to return to keep on collecting the dividend. And that's happening. I've talked to a number of people that know military members who've left, and I certainly believe in the military and all the work, but these are military members who live in Alaska who tell me about their friends or associates who've left and said, they're not going to come back. They just are keeping saying they're going to come back, but they are keeping getting this permanent fund dividend. In the Department of Health and Social Services, recently testifying, in the case of Medicaid, you leave the state. You don't get to keep on getting Alaska Medicaid as you've left the state. So this is nothing new in the aspect of you've left the state. You don't get to keep on getting this perk that we have in Alaska. And that's the intent of this here. So how the language to make sure it's clean. One is in page 2, lines 7 through 13. It states that if you are deployed or you're on a special assignment, TDY, that you're still living in Alaska, that you may be gone for a year, 2 years, whatever, but you're on a special assignment to do that. So you still get the permanent fund dividend. You may have arrived in Alaska and you're here for a short time because this is your base that you're supposed to be, but for whatever reason, you're immediately sent off on a TDY or a deployment. And you may be gone. You still are recognized as residency in Alaska. But if you have been given orders to go to another base outside of Alaska and you are moving there, you don't get to keep on claiming Alaska as your residency. So that's the intent of this bill here.
Makes sense to me. I'm just curious more broadly, Representative McCarty, did you at all consider albeit a more direct or bold approach, replicating the residency requirement for PFDs and mirroring existing residency requirements, for instance, for hunting and fishing licenses or other well-vetted, well-established residency thresholds for other, definitions of state residency?
To the chair, I did inquire about, what is residency and as example of elections and what claims residency for here. For the permanent fund dividend, to claim residency, you have to be in Alaska for a full year before you could claim it. And I know of a situation where someone I employed and they came and moved to Alaska on January 4th. And I told them you should come earlier. And they know I'll come on the 4th. And then they realize what happened.
Yeah, that makes sense. Any closing questions from the committee for the sponsor? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just refreshing my memory because it has this other provision about the employment in the aviation industry. And so I'm just curious, it sounds like you're going to work maybe with the chair on a committee substitute or something in priority. You know, one section is addressing this issue with stationed folks in Alaska that have left with no intention of coming back. The second piece, I'm trying to remember sort of where we landed on the aviation industry piece. And so just wondering if one is more important than the other, so I could provide some feedback to the chair in terms of what that committee substitute would look like. And I guess why I'm saying this is I'm trying to remember, and I mean this respectfully, but it was like, if I'm remembering correctly, sort of the reasoning around that wasn't quite as solid as the part that deals with the military folks.
Representative Tarr, through the chair, exactly. The primary purpose is this issue of you are in the military and you move out of the state. That's what it's really about. The other piece was an add-on that really is not as important, okay. And it actually led to some other discussions of what about this or that. So staying with the priority of this bill is military members who've served well and been in Alaska, but now they've moved out of state and they don't get to keep on getting the PFD.
Okay, thank you.
Seeing no other questions or comments, maybe what I would suggest is, Representative McCurdy, maybe we can work together and incorporate revisions that you're interested in, see if we can roll out a CS to the committee, and if other committee members have thoughts, input, desires, hopes, wishes, ambitions for this legislation, to contact myself and the sponsor, and we can see if we can incorporate those as well. And then for sort of ease of process, work to put out a CS, and then have an amendment process from that CS, and then look to move the legislation. So at least in the moment, I'll maybe suggest that as a path forward. And seeing no other questions, thank you very much, Representative McCurdy. No, actually, let me just put a timeline. Maybe if any member has, I mean, this is not as sort of clear-cut as submitting an amendment, but any feedback on the legislation for consideration for your CS by, say, noon on Friday. It could just be an email, pull either of us aside, whatever. Maybe that will give us the weekend to work together, get a CS drafted, and then we can get it adopted and take next steps from there. So noon on Friday as sort of a conceptual deadline for input on CS. Thank you, Representative McCurdy. Any closing comments?
No, thank you for your time and hearing this bill again.
Thank you. And with that, we'll go to the next item on today's agenda, House Bill 94 from Representative Foster. And I gather House Finance may be in session right now, but Mr. LeBoule from Representative Foster's office is here. Welcome, Mr. LeBoule, to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Brief reminder of the bill, House Bill 94. This is the bill that would add non-compete clauses to Alaska's unfair trade practices for lease agreements that are in hub zones. And hub zones are defined by the Small Business Association. I believe the committee distributed some material to the committee yesterday. And as I recall from the previous meeting, the only outstanding questions were about the hub zones. So I suppose if at the will of the chair, we could start there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Any refresher comments you might want to offer, Mr. LeBoule?
I remember specifically one of the questions was about where those hub zones were. And at the time of the hearing, they were under review for redefining those. And that process has been frozen because of the census data not being in yet. And so I believe it is frozen until 2023. Let me double check that. Yes, June 30th, 2023.
Great. Okay. Thank you. Also, let the record reflect that Representative Tarr joined us at 3:09 p.m. and Representative Eastman at 3:37 p.m. Any questions on hub zones from the committee? I'll also add that Terry Bannister from Legislative Legal is online for questions about the bill, and I may have a question or two. But Representative Vance, if
I can go up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to remember the conversation that we had about this, and if this is, was there a specific instance that highlighted the need for this? I'm trying to remember some lease. Could you remind us of what that was? Because that gives me a very tactile thing to relate to. That would be helpful to the conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The instance that brought it to our attention was in Mountain Village, and the local Native corporation had entered into a lease agreement with AC, I can't remember what that stands for, Alaska Commercial Company. And due to the non-compete clause, they couldn't open a smaller store that was like a, you know, kind of like a quick stop that would compete with AC. And in your rural areas, it's hard enough to get competition to begin with just because the population base is so low. So your market is difficult. And that added barrier to competition was what we were looking at trying to remove.
Great. Thank you.
Are there questions?
I have questions for Ms. Bannister, if she's available.
Yes. Ms. Bannister, are you online? Can you hear us?
Yes, this is Barry Bannister. I'm online.
Thank you, Ms. Bannister. Are there any equal protection issues raised by this legislation?
Yeah, it raises equal protection issues because you're not treating everybody similarly. Yeah.
Follow up. But aren't you treating everybody equally within these special economic zones that are considered underutilized business zones? So everybody outside the underutilized business zone is treated the same, and everybody inside these zones statewide would be treated the same. Why does that not resolve the equal protection issue?
Because the people outside the zone are treated differently from the people inside the zone.
Isn't that not a problem with this legislation, but isn't that a problem with the underutilized business zone, the so-called hub zones, that they're treated differently than people that are outside the zone, but the federal government has the authority to do that?
Federal law.
Sorry, Ms. Bannister, I think the connection clipped you a little bit. Could you restate your answer?
I haven't examined the federal law on that because it is federal law. The hub zones is a federal law, so it's not our statute.
Okay. Are there also issues about delegation of authority to federal government that is caught up in passing this legislation?
All right. Yes, there is. The bill depends on the operation of the setting up operation of the hub zones, and that's a federal activity. And so it raises by making our provisions depend on what the federal government does with its hub zones, where it puts them or how it operates them. That raises the issue that we are basically delegating our authority on what to do with some of these things to the federal government.
If I might just jump in, Representative.
Sure, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Bannister, so both delegation of authority to the federal government and equal protection, are these ultimately constitutional problems?
Yeah, they are. The equal protection issue, there's also an issue about local and special legislation, which is a state constitutional issue. And the improper delegation would be the activity of that the legislature is allowed to perform their activities. That would be ultimately a constitutional issue.
Could you speak to the local and special legislation consideration that you just referred to?
The bill will apply only in certain areas of the state, the hub zones. And so we have a provision in the Constitution that prohibits, that states that the legislature can't pass a law that apply. It's just local, which these would be if a general law can be made applicable. And then the courts would decide whether or not a general law could be made applicable. So we have a local situation, and then here with this bill, and I'm not saying that any of these issues would be successful, but they are issues that are raised. That in this case, there is, since it it is not a general statute. I mean, probably not considered a general statute of general application. Then the court would go on and decide whether the bill bears a fair and substantial relationship to legitimate state purposes.
And what is your opinion whether what is represented in the legislation represents a fair and substantial relationship to state purposes?
I don't have an opinion on that at this time.
Do you have an opinion on the broader constitutionality of the proposal?
I don't have an opinion on these. I haven't delved into any of them in much detail. It would take a lot of discovering a lot of the facts of each situation and applying the law, and I have had the time to go into each of these.
Okay, so you're just flagging these as things to be aware of that may represent constitutional risk, but do not necessarily compromise the Constitution. Okay.
We try to raise issues so that you're aware that this exists. These issues are present, and so that you know that.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Clayman.
Are all the constitutional issues you've identified state constitutional issues as opposed to federal constitutional issues?
Well, the equal protection might raise a federal issue under federal equal protection laws, too.
Follow up. Do you agree that the Alaska equal protection provisions are stronger equal protection provisions than the federal equal protection provisions?
Yeah, the federal equal protection ones aren't that vigorous anymore.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions from the committee? A studied silence. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just trying to look on the hub zones map to try to find out exactly where these hub zones are in Alaska. Do we have, it's not popping up as quickly as I had hoped, do we have an idea of where these are that perhaps we can provide our interpretation of whether or not it has a conflicting interest with our Constitution?
They're not in Homer, that's the only key.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hub zones cover pretty much all of Alaska for different reasons. There's several categorizations that I can go into if you'd like. But generally speaking, the portions that are not within it would be Anchorage, Matsu, and Fairbanks.
Follow up. So it is not Representative Foster's interpretation that this would conflict with our Alaska statute? Is that a safe assumption?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, the thought process behind it would be that you can violate equal protection if there's a compelling state interest. The compelling state interest in this case would be socioeconomic. So that was the avenue we were going to address that. With regards to the special legislation, that's why we went with the federally defined hub zones rather than going site specific. I mean, the main thrust is for rural Alaska. We're not trying to mess with, you know, Anchorage's business or Fairbanks's business. And so we thought by going with the hub zones, we could avoid the special location ban.
All right, thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. And the discussion with the attorney raised, I think, some interesting questions. I think the first question that I would have is here in Section 2, where we're specifically setting aside these hub zones, why wouldn't we just make that same law apply to every part of the state? I mean, what's the downside to that more general application that was being referenced in the conversation a moment ago?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If that is the will of the committee, we're not necessarily opposed to that. Representative Foster was looking at it from a rural-centric perspective and didn't want to get involved with Anchorage, but if Anchorage and Matsu and Fairbanks would like to be included, that doesn't pose any problems to us.
Thank you. For my reference, just out of curiosity, are Sitka and Homer, actually, seriously, about Homer, are they... Now, I'm just curious, would they be affected by the geographic scope of the legislation as the hub zones are defined?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I can have a moment, I should probably be able to pull that up quickly.
Sure. Any other questions about Mr. Rillipol?
I would just make an observation about the query about what would happen if we tried to apply this to Anchorage, Fairbanks, and the Matsu. And I think the answer is that a whole lot of property owners would come in and say that we want to control who's on our property. And if the notion that the mall that had, say, Fred Meyer in it, was required to put a Quick Stop convenience store right next door, I think Fred Meyer would have a lot of concerns with that. And I think it's very different when you get to a small community and there may only be one strip of stores in the entire city, and if it's owned by one landlord, it might make it impossible for a business to compete.
Right.
There it is. Yep.
And here we are. What is designated by the red, Mr. Rillipol?
That indicates that the qualified hub zone is qualified as a county. So if I...
Red equals hub zone. Is that?
Well, not just red. So I'll zoom out and give you guys a quick tour of this map. So if you want to use it more on your own. So if you click on the boxes, you can see there are multiple colors. You can get rid of those. And then so only county is highlighted now. So that shows just those areas, which covers basically everything except the previously mentioned ones in Kodiak. But then as you add census tracts, you add more. When you add Indian land, you add more. And then there's the expiring hub zones, which are expiring for various different reasons.
So the answer to my question, are Sitka and Homer hub zones, what is the answer?
Correct, they are.
They are both hub zones. Okay, thank you. Representative Kaufman.
Thank you to the committee, through the chair, and to our guest. I'm just a comment or wondering, if the unintended consequences of this could somehow dampen someone's interest into, a business's interest into going into an area. If let's say they were, to go through all the effort to establish a location, but were not able to kind of shape the nature of the surrounding area in a way that would be beneficial. And I know there's no answer really for that, I don't think, right now, but it's just a consideration. Monopolies aren't good unless that's the only way you're going to get goods and services into an area. And then it's like, well, it's the best of the possible outcomes. So just something to think about as we proceed with this.
Thank you, Representative Kaufman. Representative Eastman.
Thank you. And I'm going back to how can we write the legislation in such a way that it doesn't deal with a specific part of the state as opposed to all the state. What consideration has there been, if any, on making a limitation based on the size of the business involved or the number of locations they have? If, if you're talking about a business that only has one location, one storefront, then, maybe you don't need to worry about them popping up in different places. And we might be able to write the bill in such a way that it was geographically neutral.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe I'm unfamiliar with any statutes that do that specific categorization, but I do know one of the other routes we looked at was going by population size for communities, because there are several statutes that apply laws differently based on the population.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Vance.
Yes, thank you for that, Mr. Chair. I would like further consideration of the impacts to, you know, boroughs and municipalities if you are thinking about going that area, because, you know, for instance, in my district, the city of Homer is the only municipality, but I have other smaller communities that fall under the borough jurisdiction. How would this apply if that were to be an area that we would something about population size that we would consider? Just thinking about the impact and what the what this would mean for municipalities and kind of their feedback, perhaps, of the impacts that would make, that would, if that's the direction that you intend to go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, if the committee wanted to look at alternate methods of applying this rather than the hub zone, we would definitely want to look into that.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, and through the chair, I'm always reticent to put into state law references to federal law or federal code, because of course those can change. And what is currently a hub zone now, or as was mentioned earlier, some of them are expiring. I think it's fair to assume that some of those will change going forward. And it's certainly not impossible that when those do change, we might get all those folks from Anchorage, you know, coming in and property owners complaining, like was mentioned earlier. So if there's a way that we can categorize, you know, these types of businesses in our own state law without referring to something that may or may not change in the federal law, I'd probably be more amenable to that, only because of the level of uncertainty. If HUD zones become defined by population, I could see the federal government coming in and saying, you know, any city with less than 500,000 is underproductive or underutilized, which would basically apply to the whole state. And if we pass this bill and they were to do something like that, then we would have signed on to that without realizing it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes. The delegation of authority to the federal government was kind of a new one to me. I was unaware of that, so that's some homework I'll be doing myself. For the committee's information in terms of the hub zones changing, yes, they do. And after the freeze is over and they've rolled out the new map in 2023, then they will be reassessing that every 5 years.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we're at 5:56, so I want to honor the 4 o'clock or circa 4 o'clock start for Finance Subcommittee. I may have some legal questions or constitutional questions about the legislation, but I appreciate that proposal, Mr. O'Bull, and please feel free to pass that on to Representative Foster. So I think with that, we'll set the bill aside. And quick synopsis of next week, or rather, this next meeting on Thursday, just a reminder, 3 to 5 p.m., so a full 2 hours. We'll hear both of the political campaign contribution limits from Representative Shragi and Josephson. Dueling proposals. We'll see who escapes from the arena. And then we also have HB 251, related Board of Trustees from the Permanent Fund Corporation, and potentially bills previously scheduled. We'll sort of assess. If there's any additions, we'll let the committee know as soon as we know. So that's on Thursday. And I know Jeff in my office is querying members about the possibility of evening meetings to add some more real estate in terms of time going forward. So with that, thank you, Sophia, Lydia, and
one
Jeff.
One question for the chair.
Yeah, Representative Kleinman.
Announced deadlines for the Permanent Fund Corporation Board bill, or is that still, we don't have deadlines on those amendments?
We don't have a deadline yet. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think it was such an accelerated initial hearing that I want to just make sure that we sort of had a full exposition of the proposal. So with that, at 3:58 p.m., we are adjourned.